and talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemon.
Well, good morning and happy new year to you here, January 6th, 2021. My name's Robin Erickson. I'm your host for today's program. And again, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, campus and community radio from the top of Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we do broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. Nice to be back with you. Today on the program, I am joined by a special guest on the telephone, Belinda Carson. Hello.
Hi there.
is joining me from, virtually probably, from the Simon Fraser University's Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office. I would imagine, like most of us, you're working from home for the most part, Belinda.
Yes. I'm actually sitting on the floor in my bedroom with the door closed right now, but working very hard.
Right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join me by telephone. Before we get into what SAM is, can you let us know what the Office for Sexual Violence Support and Prevention does here on campus?
Certainly, yeah. I think that's a really important place to start. So the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, or the SVSPO, we serve the entire SFU and FIC campus community. So I think I want to start there so that people know that, you know, it's not just a center for students, that we also support faculty, staff, and really any SFU or FIC employees. Our office offers basically, I'd say, like three kinds of services. The first that I work with is the educational services. So we do a lot of like educational programming and campaigns, like Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And so there, I work with my colleague, Paolo Quiros, who was on your show last month. We're the two educators. We also, I think, a really important part is our support services. So we have two case managers that really provide free, confidential, basically holistic support to anyone who has experienced sexual violence, whether that's directly or indirectly. And then finally, we also provide more like consultative services to any departments or groups at SFU who are looking for, consultation on policy or processes, or how do we introduce change into the culture of our department. Those are those three points, and I think the important thing for everyone to know about the SVSPO is that, once again, it's not just for students or not just for employees, that I think we're quite unique in that we serve the entire campus community. And as you mentioned at the start, we have, like me, working from my bedroom floor. We shifted immediately to virtual services. So we are offering like all of our services, but virtually. So even though we're not there on campus, we're all working very hard and we're still totally accessible to clients.
Really good to know.
Oh, goodness. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
We'll just ignore that background noise.
The joys of working from home, right?
Absolutely. I totally forgot there was a phone behind me.
The The month of January is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and with the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office's mandate, obviously a big month for you folks. Mm-hmm. What do we What awareness do we need to have about sexual assault in general, and how does that relate to students and staff on this campus or on campuses in general?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really great question. I wanted to think for a minute about it, and I think the first thing I'd say is, like, one of my first goals for SAM is, although it's called Sexual Assault Awareness Month, really at SFU and at the SCSPO, we really think about not just sexual assault, but also sexual violence. And so, you know, I want folks to think about, there's an assumption about what constitutes sexual assault, but it's often people think of rape, so penetrative, sexual assault. But that there's this whole, like, that's a very narrow definition that leaves out a lot of other experiences of harm that are also covered under our policy and also obviously within the Criminal Code and the BC Human Rights Code. So things like, you know, people think of sexual assault in one way, but it also, sexual assault can also mean non-consensual physical contact. And so sometimes, like, you know, groping or something. So people don't necessarily think of that. There's also other forms of sexual violence, like sexual harassment or stalking or sexual exploitation, that I think we need to, I really would like a more expansive awareness of what constitutes sexual violence and sexual assault. And I think that's important because quite often those narrow definitions prevent folks from accessing support. They think that what they have experienced is not serious enough, and so they minimize their own experience and downplay the potential harm and then don't access support because they think they don't qualify. And, of course, those beliefs are perpetuated like that through so many of the, like, our social scripts, right? And so I'd like to start there, that if we can kind of open up people's understanding of what constitutes sexual assault and sexual violence, I think that's a really good starting place. Secondly, like, the theme of SAM this year is centering BIPOC perspectives, so the perspectives of Black, Indigenous, and peoples of color. And so I think that's really important because we also need to think about those, you know, we talk about intersectionality a lot. And so how do things like not just gender and sexuality play into, like I said, these harmful scripts and people's experiences of harm, but how does race play into that? And I think that's a really, like, urgent question to be asking, and these conversations are obviously very timely. So those are sort of the two things. And, of course, this is really important for post-secondary campuses because, you know, the boundaries between the university or academia and, you know, the larger community are very porous. And so that we are not immune to what happens in society. And, of course, we all bring these assumptions with us. And so, of course, various forms of sexual violence occur. On university campuses, they occur to members of our community, and we need to engage in a critical analysis of are there systems in our culture, in our community, our post-secondary community, that are, like, facilitating various forms of, like, microaggressions or sexual violence. And so I think that's why we need to have campaigns like Sexual Assault Awareness Month, because, you know, to be honest, like, post-secondary institutions, we are part of a larger culture, and what's happening, you know, outside the institution is also happening inside the institution.
Yes. Yes. I I love two things about that answer. One is how you make the distinction that, you know, sexual assault and sexual violence can mean different things in people's minds, you know. And it reminds me of when I was a very young, just out of high school student at university many years ago, and there was a professor in one of my classes who would get very close to the young women in the class and literally breathe on our necks, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was so creepy that I quit going to class, but I didn't realize at that time that's what it was, you know, that it was sexual violence and harassment and what the recourse was. And of course there weren't offices on campus at that time, but really being able to sort of break down those microaggressions, as you say, into things that don't look like rape, and that, you know, people still can't get away with these things. And that we are a microcosm of the macrocosm here on campus, because I think sometimes we think that, you know, universities are elevated to a status where things don't happen like they do in regular society, you know, or out in the world. So very important.
Yeah, and I think if I could touch on, like, pick up what you said, I think some of those things, you know, that are sexual violence, like sexual harassment, for example, or like you said, what the conduct of your professor many years ago, they're normalized, right? Society tells us, oh, that's, you know, like, it's just like, you know, whatever, locker room talk, or, you know, it's just humor, or it's meant to be a compliment, all this, like, don't be so sensitive, all those kinds of messages that we hear in various places and in various ways just normalize a lot of this behavior that is harmful, that makes people feel like they're not safe or they don't belong in a particular place. And so that's why I think it's so important to, like, say, no, this is not acceptable behavior. You know, maybe in the past, everyone said, oh, it's okay, just, like, put up with it. It's not, you know, it's not meant to be harmful. But the fact is, it is. And so I think if we start there by, you know, recognizing that this particular behavior is not acceptable, and that's supported now by policy, it's supported by law, it's supported by our human rights code, then that's, like, that can start to shift, you know, people's awareness of, like, okay, I don't have to put up with this, or, oh, actually what I'm doing is not okay.
That leads nicely into the next question that I have for you, which, as I understand, Sam, Sexual Assault Awareness Month highlights sexual violence as a public health, human rights, and social justice issue, and reinforces the need then for prevention efforts. What are your thoughts when it comes to the prevention of sexual assault?
I love that question. It's such a huge question.
That, right?
I have so many thoughts. How long do you want to be here? But I would say, I would like to start by saying that I think what we need to do in order to prevent sexual assault, and this is why it's such a complex issue that has no, obviously, clear solution, no single solution, just like many other public health or social justice issues, of course. And I think what we always need to keep our eye on when we're looking at prevention efforts is we need to get at the systems that perpetuate and facilitate sexual violence. So we often talk about, you know, rape culture. And so we have this, like, rape culture pyramid where at the very, I wish I could, like, I'm drawing it right now, but no one can see it. At the base of that pyramid, we have things like sexism, racism, heteronormativity, and these are these large systems that support the kinds of, like, behaviors that start, you know, at, like, at microaggressions and then can culminate in, you know, egregious forms of sexual assault or murder. And so I think we always need to be thinking about, we need to, all our prevention efforts need to encourage people to engage critically with the social scripts that we have, you know, been, with our social conditioning, let's say, that have, like we said earlier, normalized certain kinds of behaviors that have made us think in, you know, very strict, binaries when it comes to, like, gender and all the, like, roles that are associated with, heteronormative understandings of gender. I think I really want to start there. And that can't be done in a single workshop. And that's one of my sort of, I guess I would say, critiques of a lot of prevention efforts, is that we have to be realistic about what can be achieved in, you know, like a 60 to 90 minute or even a 3-hour workshop or course. And really, our approach at the SCSPO is, like, we want to build, like, a long-term plan in order to, that is multi-layered. So I always think of it almost as like a curriculum, that we have different levels and that folks come into this curriculum or to the programming or the campaign, you know, at different places, and that there are different levels that, you know, as people develop their critical awareness, their self-awareness, they can kind of move through those different levels. And that needs to be, like, designed intentionally, because all the research and the best practices in this field indicate that, like, a single workshop or a single whatever session or webinar has a very, does not have a long-lasting effect on a person's sort of understanding and their behavior. It needs, we talk about, like, I think multiple doses, which is not really a good analogy to use these days. It's, but it has to be, like, we need to think about how are all these things layered so that we can facilitate a person's and individuals, but also collective, like, growth and development and increasing awareness of these issues.
That really makes a lot of sense to me, because a lot of this is so subconscious, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when we're trying to change our belief systems as individuals and then systemically as a culture,
mm-hmm.
We are blindsided so many times about things that happen and sometimes don't know how to respond until we really get to know the language or, you know, really get embodied so that we know what it feels like when we've been violated, even,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
And what that, like, how to recognize that and then have the words to explain it and stand up for ourselves and protest and, you know, all of the things that come after that. So having an ongoing class, I think, would be something really beneficial.
Yeah, and like I think, like you said, to be able to speak up, but also to be, like, to feel entitled, to say, like, I am entitled to say that this is not okay. I am entitled to be angry about what is happening. And I think in many ways, so many different, well, you know, women in particular, but all different social identities are told by society, you are not entitled. You do not have the right to say that this is not okay. And so we have to overcome that conditioning before we feel like we have a voice and that we have the right to speak up and to say, like, this is not okay. This needs to change. And so that is done, like you said, at the collective level, but also at the individual level. And that takes, I think we want folks to learn, but actually that process of learning is really a process of unlearning. And that doesn't happen. Like, I think of, you know, my own undergraduate and then graduate career, like within those 4 years, it took 4 years to get to a point where I could see, like, oh, and a lot of like courses and feminist theory and linguistics where I could see like the patriarchal connotations that were in so much of our language that was just like totally normalized that I never saw before. And I think that took 4 years. So of course, you know, we want like a single workshop where we want to think about what is a student's, for example, experience or engagement with our programming over the course of several years. And where can they get to over several years, not just, you know, 90 minutes.
Right. Yeah. You know, I'm curious in other rationale. Sam raises awareness about the prevalence of sexual assault, shares information about available resources, and fosters a greater understanding of consent. However, I was reading an article recently in The Coast called The Problem with Consent. And the author, Tamer Dina, writes, women's sexual gratification is completely disconnected from the idea of consent. In the context of consent, women are still not expected to enjoy themselves despite the fact that women's enjoyment guarantees consent. Women's role in sex is still primarily framed as gatekeeper to men's desires and channel for male orgasm, reinforcing rape culture's premise that men's sexual entitlement, and here we're talking about entitlement, comes at women's expenses. What does Sam do to address this disparity?
I have to say, I love that you asked this question, and I was so excited to read this article because this critique of like this paradigm of consent, which is based in law, it's something that I've been engaged with very deeply over the last, I'd say, like year, and to recognize the limitations of that paradigm. And I think one thing I want to like, I think this is an important article and an important question. And, but I also want to recognize like that this question and this article is working within a very heteronormative frame. And that's supported by a lot of the statistics around, you know, examples of sexual assault or other forms of sexual violence where often the majority of times it's a male perpetrator who is the woman is experiencing harm. Now that's what this is supported by the statistics, but it does not exclude, obviously, other people perpetrating and other people experiencing harm. So I want to recognize that sort of like, that frame right off the bat. But then at the same time, I think, yes, if we think about consent, you know, the legal definition, which I think is what the critique is here, there has been that shift in, you know, particularly in post-secondary, to talk about affirmative consent. And so I think a lot of North American post-secondary institutions now, whether it's enshrined in policy or not, a lot of our educational programming is really working from this paradigm of affirmative consent, which is the next step. I think it's a step in the right direction because often affirmative consent includes that, the component of enthusiasm. So consent must be given enthusiastically. Now, I mean, I guess that gets at part of, this is a really long answer because it's such a big question. So I'll get to like how Sam addresses this in just a sec. So we have this idea of affirmative consent, and that's what I think the approach or the paradigm that like we're working from now. At the same time, it's still, I feel like we still default into this language of who's initiating, like that someone is initiating and then someone is then the other person, it's up to them to like give or withhold consent. And that still reinforces this like active, passive sort of dichotomy that is heavily gendered, of course. And so I think there are people looking for other ways to talk about, I guess, like reciprocity. I think that might be a better word. Reciprocity in, in physical intimacy and in sexuality that goes beyond that, like that there is an active, like an initiator, and then this other person, it's up to them to give or withhold consent. Another thing, too, that I think this article gets at is like if we just talk about consent in sort of like these sort of traditional ways, there's all these nuances of when it comes to particularly verbal sexual coercion. And quite often that coercion, which is, I think that's the part, like we said, it's very normalized. Quite often we don't see it. We don't recognize it for what it is. And that is left out. So it's the folks or someone going along with, you know, maybe like legally or technically they consented, but it was because of the result of, you know, like emotional pressure. And so I think I would really like to encourage folks to have conversations around coercion and what are the factors that go into, like, what are the factors that will play into whether someone says, okay, you know what, I'm just going to go along with this because of these various reasons. And we can talk more about that, but I will ramble if we get into that too much. So to circle back to your question, what does SAM do to address this disparity? I can't say that there's a particular event or, you know, part of our programming that really specifically addresses this nuance. I would rather say that this is woven through everything that we do in STEM and everything that the SDSPO does. And so, for example, in a lot of our workshops, we really focus on, like I said earlier, dismantling or challenging a lot of these assumptions around, you know, gender roles, for example. And one of those is, what is a woman's position in this situation? What is a man's? And we often do that by, like, using gender-inclusive language and names so that folks can start to engage critically. It's like, okay, what are our assumptions about this scenario if we think, like, this person is the woman and this person is the man? How does that shift if we switch those roles? How does that shift if we, like, if we have two non-binary people? And so we really want to get at those, like, myths around gender and gender roles. And that's the way we do it, is to, like, engage, ask folks to engage critically in their own assumptions around gender and sexuality, which is, as we said earlier, not really an easy task.
No, and again, not an easy task because we hold so much unconscious bias about... Mm-hmm. What those roles are and what they look like and how they've been spun into us.
I love that expression.
To act them out and not even recognize. And I think, you know, when you were talking about coercion there, how easily we can kind of default into saying yes, because when we weigh out the options sometimes, to just go along with the game is safer sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and that becomes really dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And that there's some really great examples. I listened to a podcast. It's called In the Know, and unfortunately, I'm pulling a blank on the name of the author of the podcast. But so this podcast is really transformative for me because it's autobiographical, and it's a young woman talking about, like, kind of her working through consent, really. And in one of the scenes in this podcast, she talks about, like, how she kind of, like, hooked up with a male friend, like a really good friend, had just been platonic, and for whatever reason they decided to hook up. And at a certain point, you know, partway through, let's say, she was like, you know what, I don't actually really want to do this anymore, or I don't want to do this particular thing, like, this was a mistake. But then, like you said, she's sort of weighing the options, thinking, well, but at the same time, like, I care for him, he's my friend. If I say no now, or say I don't actually want to do this, how is that going to harm our friendship? He's going to feel bad. He's going to feel rejected. I'm just going to go along with it to maintain the status quo, to protect his feelings. And so I thought that was a really enlightening example of those thought processes that go into, why women often, but also all people, may go along with things. And there is that element of social conditioning there where it's like, I'm going to prioritize this other person's feelings and needs over my own. And so I would encourage folks to listen to that podcast in the know, because it really gets into a lot of those, like, nuances that are normalized, but then also can be very harmful.
Our emotions are complicated. You know, and for navigating sex and sexual relationships, I think especially because so much of it is couched in shame, we aren't invited to really feel the breadth of emotion that we mm-hmm. feel about it, which doesn't help the situation, especially when we're forced to make decisions in the moment, mm-hmm. you know. And sometimes we need time to really, you know, let things separate, or, you know, feel where the weight of whatever that emotion might be. Yeah, and to just, I think, give ourselves a little compassion sometimes, you know, if we need time or need a little breath. Some of the events that are planned for the month of January are what? What's happening?
Yeah, so that's we're actually really excited that this year, for the first time, SFU is partnering with UBC on Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So we have some events that are kind of, let's say, like, hosted by one institution, but they're open to people from both institutions. And so some of the things that are coming up is that there are some readings and talks by Elaine Alec, who is an Indigenous author who wrote a memoir called Calling My Spirit Back. So it's about the process of individual and collective healing from trauma. There is a sexual health trivia night, which is hosted by BK Chan, who's a really, really well-known sex educator in Canada. There's also the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group. That's a bit of a mouthful. They're doing a workshop on transformative justice. One other event that I want to mention is a facilitated conversation about consent, which is for students, and it's going to be hosted and moderated by the members of the Active Bystander Network, which is the SBSPO's group of student volunteers. And they do a lot of, like, events and outreach for students around, you know, all of these issues. So there's, like, those kinds of... Sorry, I cut you off.
Oh, I was just going to say, I received an invitation to that facilitated conversation this morning. I'm very excited about it.
Oh, great. Yeah, they did a similar event, I think, last term, and I wasn't part of it, but I heard it went really well, and they were super excited to do, you know, something again this term for STEM. So I think it'll be really great. I love it. I think particularly for students, the peer model is so important. I think they can have more candid, authentic conversations if there isn't, you know, this weird power dynamic in the room and you have like a staff member or, you know, faculty member. There's another thing. So we have like these events, but also we wanted to, particularly this year, recognizing that all the events are, you know, through Zoom, they're online. Everyone's feeling kind of like burnt out on Zoom. They want to think of like other ways that folks could engage in STEM programming that's not like going to yet another Zoom event. So we also came up, we also have the hashtag Dear Survivor SFU initiative, which I'm really excited about. And so we're inviting members of the SFU and FSC campus communities to submit a message of care or support for people who have experienced sexual violence. So we have an online forum on our SAM website where folks can, you know, submit a short message. And of course, this is not to a particular person. It's just to someone. You know, if you could tell someone who's experienced sexual violence something caring, what would it be? And what we're going to do is collect all those messages, and then we're working with a graphic designer and illustrator, Adriana Contreras, and she's going to transform those messages into a piece of art, which will then be made, like, be a poster that can be downloaded from our website so folks can print it out. You know, and so it's like a nice, inspirational, affirming poster that anyone can have in their, you know, in their space. So I'm really excited about that initiative.
That sounds beautiful.
Yeah, and I have to say, like, I can't take credit for it. It was the idea of my colleague Paola, and so I think it's just such a lovely initiative and such a nice way for people to engage in SAM in like a meaningful way, but also like an easy way that doesn't mean like, oh, I have to sit in this like Zoom thing for another 60 minutes when I've already spent like hours online today.
Right. I see also on your website that there is a communications toolkit. So that if people are wanting graphics and things to use in their social media posts, there's also a Zoom background to bring awareness to the month that community members on campus are invited to use. What else is there?
Yeah, those are, I'm so glad you've done your research. So yeah, there is the communications toolkit and then the Zoom background, which is really we invite anyone to use. You know, students can use it in their classes, but also faculty and staff. I will say there's some more events kind of still in the works. We've really taken, since classes aren't in session yet this week, we're actually putting the final details on a few more events that actually today. And so the full events calendar will be posted by the end of this week. And the SAM events calendar is on the SAM webpage, which is sfu.ca/SAAM. So folks can check there for more events that sort of, as we post them, they'll be listed there. We do want to, you know, we were being mindful, like I said a couple of minutes ago, of overloading. We want to be mindful, recognize people's capacity right now for additional virtual events. And so that's where we're trying to be careful about not doing too many virtual events, because you can do all these things. And people, I think a lot of people are in a place right now like, yes, I would love to do that, but I've already spent this many hours in front of a screen today. And so, I want to be mindful of that, and I actually don't want to do all these things and then, in a way, encourage people to spend more time on Zoom or in front of a screen when we know that's really not what anyone needs right now. So that's why we were thinking about other ways to do sort of like creative programming, like hashtag Dear Survivor SFU. We also worked with Residence Life. And so all students who are living in residence this term will be receiving like care packages that are delivered by their CAs. So things like that, where it's not an event, but it is programming in a different format that's not, like a virtual event or webinar or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Because sometimes we're just zoomed out.
Exactly. And we wanted to let's just be realistic. This January is not a typical January, obviously. So let's be realistic about, people's capacities and sort of develop the programming and the month in recognition of that.
Yeah, I appreciate that as looking at my calendar and seeing nothing but Zoom links.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I will also post the link to the SAM website for listeners to find out more and have a look at the calendar and as well the hashtag Dear Survivor if people want to contribute a message for that. I want to just make sure that we haven't missed out on anything in terms of last words or where people can find you.
Yeah, thanks. I'll keep it short because don't open the door too wide or I'll just, keep talking. just to reiterate that the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office is still available and offering full services to all SFU and FIC students, faculty, staff, employees during this time, and that people can access that. Really, I think the easiest way is if you're on the SFU website, just search SBSPO, and we come up right away. And if people want to learn more about SAM, to go to the SAM website, which is sfu.ca/SAAM. And then I would also encourage folks to follow us on Facebook or Instagram. So the SBSPO. I don't have the handles right off the top of my head, but if you search it, it also comes up really easily. And that's an easy way to engage with SAM programming. You can just see the messages and stay up to date. And without having to spend like I said, 60 to 90 minutes on Zoom.
Perfect. And how can people be in touch with you particularly if they want?
Yes, I think the best way is to contact me by email. So my email address is Belinda, so Belinda _KARSEN. At sfu.ca. And so my role particularly, so I'm kind of the coordinator. I don't know. Like there's a whole group of people who are working together to plan and to organize SAM this year. And I'm just the person who's like, hello, come talk to me if you have any questions. So if people have questions about SAM or suggestions, they can email me. Also, I work on educational programming for graduate students, faculty, and staff at SFU. So if anyone is listening and they're interested in having a workshop or developing something even more robust than a workshop, I would invite them to contact me as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time this morning, Belinda, and best with all of the events planned for the month and dismantling this culture that we have so that it's safer for us all in the world.
Thank
to
you.
Show
Maybe
up
over my entire career with hundreds if not thousands of other people, we'll get there. It's not going to happen in the month of January, but this is a place to start.
Yeah, chipping away.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Thanks so much, Robin.
Thank you. We're going to have a listen to a song, actually, that you proposed and and sent to me, which is beautiful, and will take us out today. Do you want to just introduce it before we say so long?
Sure. I hadn't. I'm really bad at remembering names, but it's called Respirus by, I think, if I'm not mistaken, because I sent it to you way before the break, which seems like months ago.
I know.
Italia Loca, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love it because it's multilingual. It was actually, two of my colleagues at the SCSPO introduced it to me. And I just love it because it does remind us to just breathe and to reconnect with our bodies and to take a pause. I think it's important to remember to slow down, you know, in our lives, particularly now, and particularly when we're feeling overwhelmed. So that's what I really liked about it. And I thought it was a really nice, like, hopeful and affirming place to kind of wrap up our conversation.
Perfect. Thank you so much. This is Respira. beautiful little track there, Respira by Natalia Doko. And just a reminder that my guest today was Belinda Carson from the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office here on campus. And we were talking about SAM, Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which runs for the entire month of January. Events will be posted on their website, and you will find links with the audio archive of this show when they get posted up online. I have been your host. My name is Robin Erickson. Thanks so much for listening.